Using my GI Bill taught me I can do anything. And seeing me graduate taught my daughter she can too. VA benefits cover tuition, housing, and supplies. Get what you earned. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for the type or amount of benefits mentioned here.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batzer. Democracy in the 21st century. The word is used as a signature of virtue, but what is democracy in the 21st century? We can say what it is not. It is not kleptocracy. It is not a dictatorship. And then again, it is used by SAME to give the virtue signal to those who would align with SAME, dictatorships or oligarchies or autocracies or kleptocracies. So, is it important to define democracy, or, as Gregory teaches me, must we reimagine democracy? Gregory, democracy is such a big word, it's amorphous. What does it mean? Is it one of those words that means different things depending on where you are in the world? Good evening to you.
Well, it's like all words, as we've seen, particularly over the past 25 or so years or more, or the last century particularly, words can be co-opted and given, if you like, reverse meanings to their original intent. So we've seen that with literally everything from words we use in every day. But democracy is critical because democracy has always emerged in waves. This time, well, in the 20th century, however, it became used universally, as you say, as a virtue signaling, and it meant all kinds of things. The Democratic People's Republic of Korea, the DPRK, is what has democracy to do with that? What has democracy to do with any of these? Democratic Republic of Congo and the like. And how do you define democracy? Now, if you ask any Westerner, particularly any American, they'll say it's the ability to vote in your leaders every 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, whatever. And the reality is we've seen that that whole system can be manipulated as well. You could argue that you have to get back to defining the spirit of democracy, which, as the Greek name for it implies, is about the demos, the polity of the society making decisions. Now, does that mean that the people at the grassroots make the decisions and then dictate to the aristocracy or the leadership, what's going on? Or does it mean, as we started to see in the period of the Enlightenment, an actual thought of a social contract in which neither the top nor the bottom nor the middle of any society is actually trying to demand things of another section of that hierarchical structure? A social contract often dictates, does dictate how the leadership and the led interact and ensure their happiness, or in the case of America, their pursuit of happiness. And every time we say, well, the society is too big and too complex, so we must reduce this to a constitution or a set of legalities, laws, and the like, we tend to then find that the society evolves to find ways around those sets of laws so that you gain advantages, whether financial or in terms of social position and the like, which theoretically are anti-democratic because they are not part of the social harmony. And so the best examples of democracy may occur and have the best opportunity of occurring, I would suggest, where it's not divided, it's not defined by laws which can be, as I say, manipulated and appealed and be subject to current sway. A true social contract should imply an understanding which defies writing, in a sense, between the leadership and the led. And the best way we've seen that evolve was through monarchies, and particularly through what we're now calling constitutional democracies, which it's a modern monarchy, if you'd like, which says that the monarch is there to embody the goodness of the society, and we at the grassroots impose our ideals upon that figurehead, so that we're all basically in the same sense, so that there's always a sense of justice which is fairly commonly felt within each society according to its geography and its history and its identity. But the minute you start to write it down, it becomes contested, it becomes subject to interpretation, but it's mostly becomes subject to who can manipulate it most, whether by financial means or political or military means. So if we're going to have, at the end of the current chaos in the world today, whether it's collapse of China, collapse of Europe, bitterness throughout dividing the United States and North America, what we have to do is to reimagine some of this so we take away the rigidity of our society and get back to saying, well, what do we have? What do we feel in common about our ways we live our life? How do we live our life without imposing ourselves on others? Whether you're the masses imposing the reality on the government or the leadership, or vice versa, and we haven't even thought about that. That's the point of this recent article that we just did called Searching for Democracy 2.0 or Something Better. Because, as I said, democracy as we have known it is dead. That democracy was very different from Plato's version of democracy, or the democracy of the South Asia in prehistory 10,000 years ago. But the point I make is democracy is dead. Long live democracy. But is this new democracy we're going to have just use the name democracy as the North Koreans did or something? Or are we going to do as the founding fathers in the United States did, attempt to start again from scratch and define what we mean by democracy? And we keep confusing that with or conflating it with liberty and freedom. And these are really different concepts. Can you have democracy without individual liberty or a free society? And what constitutes free? I mean, freedom generally means, as interpreted these days, as doing whatever the heck you like. And maybe that's a bad place to start, because freedom has got to be the freedom of thought of people to think about how they act within a society, because we can't exist without a society. So we're tied to it just for reproduction and survival means. So we better start thinking about our individual capability to create a society which is equitable and safe and helpful. And we're not doing that. This is the point of the article, is that not that there's something new is going to come about. Something new is happening. We better start thinking about what it is so that we can really be voices in making the debate of where do we go from here. And if we keep saying, well, we'll just recreate what we had before, only we'll get rid of all of the corrupt people, well, that's not going to work, because the system became corrupted through the inevitable, if you like, lifespan of democracy, which, as Plato said, eventually evolves to become mob rule. We keep extending the vote, for example, so that people start voting rewards for themselves, regardless of the future of the society as a whole. And when they don't get what they want, they start tearing at the leadership, tearing at the central government and the like. So that's why, as Plato said, democracies are like hemorrhagic fevers. They're quick to ignite and quick to burn out, and then you have to start again with some kind of system. And generally, when you go through that process, what happens immediately after democracy is a form of autocracy or inspirational leadership, which unites a country to rebuild again. So in a sense, that implies that you have to collapse a society in order to start rebuilding. How can we in the West, for example, rebuild Western civilization, Western nations, while we still have massive corruption and inefficiencies and, if you like, paralysis within our existing structures.
Do we ask too much of government, of democracy, to give us a social contract that binds us together? Is that a utopian wish that we grow frustrated because it doesn't happen, but it never was going to happen?
Well, I think we do ask too much of government because we put people in a position where they have power, which they don't wish to relinquish. So if we ask that segment of society to say, well, to walk away from their power and benefits, some will, and some will be altruistic in defining a new form of governance. But the only way you can break from the existing structure is if societies voluntarily step back from asking the collective or the power structure to give them all of their things, because that gets you into a situation where people automatically subordinate themselves to a power group in order to get benefits, including food, housing, whatever. So really, you have to have an almost revolutionary approach to government, and I use the word revolutionary advisedly, because you need to have governments which are prepared to say, you know, no, you look after yourselves. We're going to remove the government from the equation so that the society itself has more control without government interference. And this is why the U.S. Constitution, for example, which was fairly altruistic, perhaps in some places naive, but altruistic in the point of saying if something is not expressly controlled within the Constitution by the government, then it is outside the control of government. And in other words, it's for the people themselves to decide how they go about things. But what we've found since the foundation of the U.S. democracy, or the U.S. Republic, should I say, is that the government has claimed more and more of these gaps so that everything becomes regulated instead of the reverse, which is few things are regulated and everything else is by common consent.
Then the word democracy is used, I've said before, dismissively virtue. The word democracy is a utopian ambition that no one has achieved. Is that correct?
I would say that's correct.
Then reimagining, maybe we should stop chasing the golden ring here, Gregory, and accept the fact that we're imperfect.
And that, absolutely.
And if we accept that, the criticism from the left, that would be socialism, is ill-conceived, and the criticism from the right that we're undisciplined is ill-conceived. We do very well together. What, how does it go, Gregory? Life is what happens while you're planning?
Yes,
so
exactly.
Life is what happens while we're chasing democracy. Gregory Copley, Defense and Foreign Affairs. What democracy? Where? We're going to turn to perhaps the fundamental argument. It was the early part of the 17th century, a man named James VI comes to London, and therein lies the tale. Gregory Copley.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills, accelerate your team's impact, and redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more.